DC Comics Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
I am doing great today, Adam. I am super, super excited to talk about what we're going to be talking about on this episode. This is an episode that I fought very hard to make sure we were getting out when we are, so I can't wait, and we are 137 days away from the Batcat wedding, so I'm in a great mood this morning, Adam. How about you, man?
I'm good. I actually it was good. This morning, I didn't get to watch it all because I had to prepare for the podcast, but Man of Steel was on TV, so I was watching a bit of that.
Oh, nice. Hey, there you go. Always a good movie to watch.
and was cursing the fact that Warner Bros. Has yet to reveal who will be directing the sequel or when it's coming out. That was my morning, but it was pretty good. And what Jordan is referring to is that we are doing today a review of Batman Annual Number 2 because Jordan is insistent on doing a quasi-Valentine's Day episode, even though Valentine's Day is already a week or so removed.
Oh, it'll be 6 days when this episode
A week. Let's not split hairs. A week removed. But before we get to the review, we have a lot of news to get to.
Yes.
So let's get to it.
All righty. Well, as usual, we're going to start out with film news. Yeah. And first up, we've got news that Joaquin Phoenix is in talks to play the Joker in Todd Phillips' standalone Joker origin film.
Essentially, what it is by in talks, what they mean is, as of the time it was posted, I don't know if anything's changed since then, but as the time the report came out, over the holidays, early in the new year, Joaquin Phoenix met with Todd Phillips and has verbally agreed to the role of the Joker, to play the role of the Joker. Now, what has to happen is Warner Brothers has to enter into the negotiations because Todd Phillips has said, all right, Joaquin Phoenix is my guy. Now Warner Brothers has to go in and negotiate with his agents and such. So he's in talks, but the talks with the studio have yet to begun. He said yes to Todd Phillips, and now Warner Brothers has to go in and close the deal. That's where we are. To me, the most important thing with any of these roles, you know, Batman, the Joker in this case, is to get the best actor you can. And Joaquin Phoenix is an Academy Award, a talent. And so somebody of that caliber is always a good thing for the Joker. I'm excited about this. I know, some people are like, well, the Joker doesn't really need an origin. And that's fine to have that perspective. But, we've seen both ends of the spectrum. We've seen the Joker with an origin in the 1989 Tim Burton Batman. We've seen...
Well, even before that in The Killing Joke.
Right, but I'm talking filmic experiences.
Oh, okay.
Right? And so we've seen, The Dark Knight, where his origin was unknown, and he kept telling people different versions of the story.
Even Mask of the Phantasm sort of gave us a little bit of a Joker origin.
Yeah, it was very, very brief. He was one of the mobsters working for, was it Thorne?
Valestra,
I can never get my mobsters straight on this show. There were many mobsters on the Batman series and in that world, so... And then, you know, obviously the Suicide Squad film didn't give us an origin for the Joker. They gave us one for Harley Quinn with the Vada chemicals, but didn't give us a specific one for the Joker. So I assume he fell into the Vada chemicals, but that was never outright specified.
Yeah.
So I'm down with seeing one. You know, it's a gangster movie set in the 80s. You know, very Martin Scorsese inspired, and I think you mix Martin Scorsese inspiration with Joaquin Phoenix and the character of the Joker, and I think we could have something special here. And I'm cool with the whole DC doing Elseworlds offshoots, because it just opens up the universe a little bit more and allows you to take some chances and also, you know, tell different stories. And I think sometimes the best DC stories are the Elseworlds stories. So to lean on that area for films, I think is going to be good. For story potential and for the audience. What are your thoughts, Jordan?
Yeah. Well, I'm excited about this. I was excited about the movie before we got this news. I agree with you that I think that I think a Joker origin film can work, in that I think here's the thing. I think that it can work either way. I think that Joker works great when you do have his origin, and I think he works great when you don't have his origin, if the origin is done well in the case of him having an origin. Now, Batman 89, I don't like the way they did his origin at all. Mask of the Phantasm, I'm not a big fan of what they did with him there either.
Mask of the Phantasm was barely there, so I mean.
But here's the thing. I don't like the idea of him being a criminal already before he becomes the Joker.
Okay, I see.
That's why I love The Killing Joke, because it's a very, yes, he technically was committing a crime when he became the Joker, but he wasn't a criminal, and so I love that. I love a more sympathetic take. I'm not a big fan of what Gotham did either.
According to everybody involved, Jerome is not going to be the actual Joker. I don't know if you've heard that.
Yeah, I've heard. We'll see. They keep waffling back and forth on that, so we'll see what winds up happening with that. But I'm not a big fan of, if he does wind up becoming the Joker, I'm not a big fan of the origin, as much as I love Cameron Monaghan's performance. But getting back to this film, if the origin is done well, I think it could be brilliant. And I mean, yes, I like it when there is no origin. I think you can do that great. The Dark Knight showed us that. But I'm totally open to them doing a Joker origin film if it's done well. And the whole idea of the Elseworlds line, I love it. It's what the DCU AOM line has been doing for years now, where they have their shared universe, and then they also do their out-of-continuity films. So I'm totally down with that. As for Joaquin Phoenix, quite frankly, I'm not actually that familiar with him. I think the only movie I've ever seen him in is Her. Was that film?
Yeah, it was. But also, I'd recommend Gladiator.
Okay.
With Jor-El, Russell Crowe.
Okay.
And also, I'd recommend Signs, M. Night Shyamalan.
Yes. That's the one I've definitely been meaning to see, because I'm a fan of M. Night Shyamalan's films.
There are others, but I would start with those. And those two.
Yeah. Okay. And I did really like him in Her, and I know that he's a very well-regarded actor, so I'm all for it. I'm all for this casting.
Cool. Well, we'll keep you posted on the finalization of that deal, provided everything goes smoothly. And then on subsequent bits of information as we get them.
Cool. All right. Well, moving on to some more live action DC films news.
Yeah.
Well, it looks like Michael Bay might wind up directing Lobo. He made some notes on Jason Fuchs' script for the film.
Uh-huh.
And
essentially what happened was Warner Brothers wants him to direct. He's keen on directing, but as Jordan is alluding to, he gave notes to writer Jason Fuchs, and the reason he gave those notes is because as it's presently constructed, the script for Lobo would cost $200 million. Warner Brothers, certainly in the wake of BVS and Justice League, does not want to spend $200 million on a lesser known property like Lobo. And the best part is Michael Bay even said, there's, you know, I don't want to make the movie for $200 million. So my reaction is twofold. When Michael Bay is telling you that your budget is too high, your budget is too damn high. simple as that. Second of all, he's right, and so is the studio, in that there's no reason why Lobo has to be $200 million.
Yeah.
Like, if let's be honest, Lobo is DC's, and I know Lobo. Actually, I don't know that for certain. Which I think Deadpool came first, but Lobo, in effect, is DC's Deadpool. Deadpool cost $50 million?
I think it was a little more expensive, okay. But yeah, like
something in the realm.
Yeah.
Lobo should definitely be a sub $100 million film. There's no need for a $200 million budget. So they're both right, Warner Brothers and Michael Bay. Yeah. As for Michael Bay directing Lobo, the idea of it, and I know the internet, hates Michael Bay almost as much as they hate Zack Snyder. I actually don't know who the online community and the critics hate more, Michael Bay or Zack Snyder. It would be an interesting study to investigate, just to see who's more reviled. But I don't share that hate. Look, I like Michael Bay, so a lot of Michael Bay's film. Armageddon is a guilty pleasure of mine, with Bruce Willis, Ben Affleck, and. The ever so lovely, what is her name? Liv Tyler. I like The Rock, the one with Sean Connery, and I want to say Nicolas Cage is in that one, but I could be mistaken there. But I know Sean Connery's in it. You know, I'm a fan of, you know, most of his Transformers efforts. There's 13 hours of Benghazi that he did, I think it was 2 years ago. I enjoyed that. So, and the cool thing is Michael Bay has shown a variety in that sense, that he can work with a bigger budget. Oh, and I like Bad Boys, the Bad Boys movies with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. I forgot those. But Michael Bay has shown an ability to alternate between a lower budget film and a you know, massive scale budget film. So he's capable of doing the lower budget film. And also, what is Michael Bay known for? You know, his characters are often, you know, macho, or his male characters, macho, they're brash, often, you know, to use the phrase loosely, not literally all the time, but you know, motorcycle riding kind of guy, tough guys, and you know his films are famous for explosions, and when you look at Lobo, what is he? He's a macho, chauvinistic, alien bounty hunter who chomps on a cigar, rides a motorcycle, and whenever he's involved, explosions are sure to follow. If there is a more perfect pairing than Lobo and Michael Bay, I have no idea what it is. I think this is a great pairing, and I'm all for this.
Yeah, okay, first of all, I totally agree on that they need to bring this budget down, and I'm hoping that this was a budget that sort of was established before Walter Hamada came in, because I'm really hoping that
Of that I have no doubt. Because okay. Under the old regime, Warner Bros. Would have greenlit this sucker, right? You know.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that. Yeah. I'm hoping that was the case.
It would have been in production. They would have given Jason Fuchs 2 weeks to work on the script, and it would have been in production already.
I'm really hoping that that is the case, and that this is not something that Walter Hamada has approved of, that $200 million budget. But I definitely think that needs to come down significantly, and I'm glad that it looks like that's what's going to wind up happening. Michael Bay, I think I've seen three films that he's directed, and the first two are the two Bad Boys films, which I really really enjoy. I think those films are hilarious.
Yeah.
Then I saw the first Transformers movie, which I don't care for at all. But that he's 2 for 3 in terms of the three films he's made in my eyes. So yeah. I'd be down for this. And you're right. This seems right up his alley. I mean, this is exactly the type of film that I feel like would be right in Michael Bay's wheelhouse. So do I think he's a great director? No, but this is his kind of movie. So it's like, it seems like a match made in heaven to me. And, the other thing I was going to say, just to bring this up, I don't know if you saw this, just out of curiosity, Adam, there was a Family Guy episode recently where basically they split it into three parts and they had each one.
Was there something with a board meeting and Michael Bay, or there was a Michael Bay stand-in or something like that?
I remember some gag like this, but that's not like that on one episode, but that's not what I'm referring to with this one.
Oh.
This one, they did one episode with three different episodes in it, where one was a Family Guy episode as if it was directed by Quentin Tarantino. Then the next one was a Family Guy episode as if it was directed by Wes Anderson. And then the third one was a Family Guy episode as if it was directed by Michael Bay.
Uh-huh.
So it was really funny. But anyway, sign me up. I'm in for this.
And, like, you know, sometimes us DC fans, like, they look at the director and, like, oh, no. And it's like, every movie that DC puts out does not have to be, you know, a Christopher Nolan film. Like, you can have a mindless popcorn flick. Those are okay once in a while for certain characters.
And yeah.
For Lobo, that's exactly what you want.
Yes, exactly. I would not want that for Batman, but
the character of Lobo is not that deep and introspective.
Exactly, exactly. So, that's why that's what a Lobo movie I feel like should be.
Right.
So.
Exactly. So we're on board with this, and we'll again, much like the Joker situation, we will update you on the progress as we have news about that.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully, the main man is not too far away.
Yeah.
All righty. Moving on to our final piece of films news. Now moving on to an animated film.
Yeah.
Which is that Teen Titans Go to the Movies has a poster now.
Right.
And it's a spoof of one of the Justice League movie posters, which was the one that was inspired by Alex Ross, where you've got the five characters and it says, you can't save the world alone, but on the, Teen Titans to Go to the Movies one, it says they can't save the world at all. And it's cool because, you know, they put the, just like the Justice League one did, where they had the logos in terms of the words, like they had Cyborg C.
Yeah, it's a total rip-off homage to...
Yeah, they did that with the Teen Titans Go logos, although there's one, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on this. There's one that I can't figure out whose logo it's supposed to be, because you've got the Cyborg one, then you've got an S and a star. Okay, so one of those is Starfire. I'm wondering if the other one is Slade, but he's not one of the actual Titans, so I don't know if the S is supposed to be for Slade, and the star is supposed to be for Starfire, if the S is supposed to be for Starfire and the star is for something else. Then you've got the Raven one and the Robin one and then the Beast Boy with the paws. So I was curious to get your thoughts on that and then your thoughts on the poster overall.
Well, if I had to guess, it's probably Slade, because last time I checked, Superboy wasn't on this thing.
You think the S is Slade and the star is Starfire?
The star is seems obvious to Starfire to me, so the S would have to be Slade, I would assume.
In terms of
the poster,
that makes sense.
I mean, yeah, it's a spoof of the Justice League poster, but you know, the Justice League captured Alex Ross to a T. Teen Titans Go to the Movies is shitting on Alex Ross to a T, just like they do shit on the DC Universe. But I don't like this movie. I've never liked the idea of this movie or this cartoon. I hate this cartoon. So I'm glad that people who love it have it, but I could care less.
Okay. I mean, personally, I just think it's a cool spoof on the Justice League poster.
I don't understand how you like this. We won't get into this discussion again. How you fully accept this spoof, which doesn't take anything seriously at all. And yet you do not like the Lego Batman movie. I don't get it.
Okay, here, I'll just very briefly, I'll explain what the difference is. I don't love Teen Titans Go. I really don't. I like it more than most people do, but I'm not like a huge fan of the show or anything. I of course much prefer the original, the 03 Teen Titans animated series.
Right.
So I'm not like a huge fan of this series, but I do appreciate it more than I like Lego Batman, because for me, you can do humorous things with other DC characters that you can't do with Batman, in my opinion. So I don't have as much of a problem with them making Beast Boy out to be comedic, because Beast Boy is traditionally, even in more serious stories, he is like the comedic one.
Yeah, okay,
Beast Boy, okay, sure, yeah. And I mean, yes, they're Raven and Robin, who are more serious characters usually, even Starfire and Cyborg, I prefer when they're taken more seriously, but it doesn't bother me in the same way that it bothers me when Batman is.
To me, the whole thing is a sham, and I'm glad people who like it have it, but I can't wait till July has come and gone, and this thing is out of the periphery and out of sight and out of mind. That's what I think.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, I'm.
You can go watch it and report back on how not good it is, but.
Guess I might have to get a guest for that review.
Well, definitely. Like I said, I have zero plans to watch them.
Alrighty. Alright, well, moving on to TV news, or sort of TV. I'm classifying it as TV, even though it's on the streaming service, because let's be honest, in this day and age, streaming is pretty much TV.
Mind you, because I live in Canada, it'll probably end up on TV for me, so it still counts.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go. Are you thinking you're not going to get the streaming service?
Well, I better goddamn well get the streaming service. I've been promoting this thing since they announced it. I've been giving Warner Brothers free promotion. They better release it in Canada, goddamn. Listen, we have the WWE network in Canada and the US. So I think the DC streaming service should be the same damn thing. So
okay. I mean, yeah.
Don't let me down, Jeff Johns. I won't accept anything else. I want to stream. I want to give you my money, damn it. So make it available is what I'm saying.
The only thing that would have me trepidatious if I were you is the fact that you guys don't have CW Seed, right? With the
we don't have that. But that's more. I don't want to say niche. But it kind of is, so.
Yeah.
But hey, we're getting, you know, I mean, we don't have sci-fi, but we're getting Krypton on our equivalent, which is space. So I'll still get Krypton.
So what you're saying, though, is you think that you might wind up getting the streaming service shows on regular television rather than.
If they don't provide it available to. To Canada right away, the shows most likely end up on a Canadian station. So
okay, I see.
So that's what I'm hoping for. So we shall see. But make it happen, Jeff Johns. Don't alienate. You know, half of North America because for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming it's going to be worldwide, so I think it will be fine. Listen, one way or another, I'm watching all these shows. Don't make me go. I'm warning you, people. Don't make me go the illegal route. I'll do it, but I don't want to. I want to give you my money, and so allow me to give you my money. That's what I'm saying.
Well, hopefully it'll just be you'll be able to get the streaming service, and it'll be no problem.
Right.
And, you can have them all in one place and, right. and watch them like everybody in the U.S. So
that's right. Yep.
Cool. Well, we do have some details on one of those animated series, one of the animated series that's going to be on there, which is the Harley Quinn animated series. Mm-hmm. So we've got some character descriptions. We've got two characters who are going to be, let's see, are they all going to be series regulars, or is it just the two that they gave full description for? Anyway, I'll just start from the beginning. Okay, first off, the Joker is going to be a series regular. He's going to be 40. Equal parts homicidal and charismatic. He's been Harley's longtime awful boyfriend. But when Harley breaks up with him, she vows to take his cherished number one spot on the most wanted list. The Joker thinks of Harley as his creation, and, as she grows in power, does everything he can to stop her. Next up, Dr. Pamela Isley, a.k.a. Poison Ivy, of course, late 20s, sarcastic and incredibly smart, Ivy is Harley's best friend and now roommate. Very much a loner, she prefers plants over people. Ivy is sometimes the voice of reason, but always a true friend to Harley. Ivy soon becomes her reluctant partner in crime. Also a series regular, if I did not mention that. Okay, and then I should, because those parts were like quotes, like I guess from that hashtag show.
Sure.
But then I've got some, I'm reading off of Rose Moore's article on Screen Rant, so I just want to give credit where credit is due, because then she goes, and I think these are her words. In addition to Poison Ivy and the Joker, Cy Borgman will be appearing as a retired super spy in a wheelchair, who is landlord to Harley and Ivy, and uses that position to try and blackmail them into including him in their villainous cabal. Dr. Psycho will also be appearing, described as an angry misogynist dwarf with telekinesis. Previously a famous supervillain, Dr. Psycho is now disgraced and willing to put up with Harley to get back in the game. Harley's new gang is rounded out by Malice Vunderbar, a rich intern with a demonic shadow cat named Cheshire that she carries around in her designer purse. Clayface, who can shapeshift, but is a terrible actor looking for any crew or acting gig that will take him and King Shark, a gentle soul who just wants to be normal. That is, until he smells blood, and then he goes into a frenzy and literally eats everyone.
Yeah, I mean, that's all.
That, what's that? That's all.
That's all. Yeah, I mean, I expected the Joker to be there. I expected Ivy to be, you know, half expected Ivy to be there.
I was expecting Ivy as a series regular. I expected we'd see the Joker at some point. I was not expecting him to be a series regular, though, which is cool.
And so, you know, the other ones there, I noticed that there are some characters mixed, you know, like you get King Shark and Clayface, which is more in line with the comics. And then you have some, you know, traditional Batman characters. And then you have some that have just recently appeared on, in the current Harley Quinn comic.
Yeah, like Cyborgman.
Yeah. So it seems like a cool mix. I'm excited for the show. It'll be cool to see who's rounding out the voice cast of these characters. And then to see like some more actual animation from the series. And eventually a trailer, I think. But I'm in principle and hearing these characters, I'm on board. I'll give it a go. It sounds fun.
Yeah, me too. This just got me even more excited for the show, because this really seems like they're going full out, just hilarious animated comedy. Yeah. Very much in the vein of, like, I think this is going to be very similar to Batman and Harley Quinn, which I know a lot of people didn't like, but I really enjoyed that movie. And I think that this could be, like, just a raunchy comedy. I mean, I talked about Family Guy earlier on there. So I feel like this could be, on this episode, I feel like this could be, like, a DC Family Guy type of show.
And I think the key to pulling that off and not getting people pissed off is not connecting it to, or not having any loose connections or implied connections to Batman the Animated Series.
Oh, yeah, I don't think it's going to have that. I mean, even if you...
What I'm saying is that's why Batman and Harley Quinn, I think, pissed off a lot of people, because it was the implied connection of this is, you know...
In the DCAU.
Yeah. And it had all the returning, you know, a lot of the returning voices. Stuff,
so. That's a good point. And I think that, I mean, that's what you talk about all the time with the Schumacher films, is that the biggest issue is that they're saying that this is the same universe as the Burton films.
Right. That's
yeah.
The problem. And so as long as they differentiate that from the Hulk right off the get-go, I think you're fine.
I agree with you there. And I'm surprised that the Joker is going to be a series regular. So presumably we'll be seeing a lot of him. That'll be interesting. I'm curious to see who they get to voice him. I mean, obviously, we've had a lot of great Joker voice actors over the years, so I'm wondering where they go in that direction. Poison Ivy, I expected. What's curious is, you remember that we got that art from the series earlier, like that concept art, when they first announced the series? And it's curious to look at which characters in that concept art are the ones here that have been announced. Poison Ivy was in that concept art. Clayface was in that concept art. King Shark was in that concept art. Yeah. But then some of the others were not. So, like, Cy Borgman, I don't think, was in the concept art. Yeah. That'll be interesting. He's one that is, I think, in the Harley Quinn comic.
Yes, he
right
is.
Now.
Yeah. I think. I think the concept art is just an early indication. I think.
Yeah.
A little bit of the art will probably, you know, change a bit. So I wouldn't get too married to the way that looks at this point just yet.
Oh, sure. I was just curious how much they are sticking. Like, we can now start to discern how much they are keeping with that. You know what I mean?
They're throwing people from the current comic and in terms of Batman lore in general. So I think they're very aware they're sticking is, you know, in terms of exploring the character true and not depending on the interpretation, we'll see.
So then we've got Dr. Psycho, who is a Wonder Woman villain, which is interesting. They're sort of expanding the DC universe here a little bit.
Sure, yeah.
Malice Wunderbar, he's like a New Gods character, right?
Yes. So I mean it seems like they're going all over the DC universe, which is cool. It's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. This should be a lot of fun.
I'm ready for it. And I know the rumor was that they were trying to get Margot Robbie to do the voice. If they could pull that off, I'm going to be a happy camper, my friend. I'll tell you that right now.
I'd be thrilled if she voiced the character for this. That would be awesome.
My Earth, what number did I say she was? Earth 2?
I think Earth 2, yeah.
My Earth 2 wife, baby, she's representing me. I like it. Let's go. All right. So I hope she does it. My Earth 2 counterpart will put in a good word. I've gone delusional. What's next?
Hey, well, it's just like when I had my Earth 2 counterpart who sent in the question about Smallville.
You forced that. You ham-fisted that reference in. That was the worst, one of the worst references I've ever seen. But what's next on the list?
All righty. Well, next up, we've got some Titans news. So continuing on with DC streaming service stuff. Which is first off, we didn't talk about this yet, so let's talk about the fact that I think it was Jeff Johns who sent out like an image on Twitter of one of the scripts for, I think, episode 5, which is going to be an episode focused on the Doom Patrol. Let's just talk about that for a second first before we talk about the casting news that we got with regards to that. Just talk about what you think about the Doom Patrol coming to Titans.
I mean, to go that far into the DC universe and really pull those characters out and bring them into live action, I think is exciting, because again, they're not mainstream, they're not heavy hitters, but that's the beauty of having Jeff Johns work on these things, is that, you know, he's the kind of guy with that breadth of knowledge that will say, okay, let's pull these guys, because there's no studio executive that's going to say, oh, I got an idea, let's bring the Doom Patrol in. I mean, the studio's idea, like, here's as far as the studio will go. They'll be sitting around a table and says, okay, what can we do to make sure that this goes off well? And then three or four of them will be like, I know, let's put Batman in it. Like, that's their length of knowledge is, can we put Batman in it? But having somebody like Jeff Johns, he will pull, you know, the Doom Patrol. And for anybody that doesn't know, I mean, go to Wikipedia. We're not going to tell you exactly who the Doom Patrol is. We could fill an episode giving you the ins and outs of the Doom Patrol. Basically, they're the team that Stan Lee ripped off to create the X-Men, in a short version of it. But I'm excited that such a like, it's a deep cut in terms of pulling from DC lore, and I'm intrigued.
Me too. This had me very excited, and the thing that I thought to first was what the 03 Teen Titans animated series did with the Doom Patrol.
That's right. They were in that. Yeah, correct.
They were, yes. In season 5, they came in, because each season of that, if you remember, focused on a different Titan. So season one was Robin's season. Season two was Tara's season. Season three was Cyborg's season. Season four was Raven's season. Season five was Beast Boy's season. Starfire never got a season, but maybe
season six. Yeah, well, the show shouldn't have been canceled in favor of that Teen Titans Go garbage, but...
it wasn't canceled in favor of Teen Titans Go. Teen Titans got canceled, like... 7 years before Teen Titans Go even premiered.
Whatever, but they brought it. But their solution was, let's put out Teen Titans Go, is what I'm saying. But yeah. Anyway.
Well, I don't think that was their salute. That was completely. That was way after
Teen Titans. Yeah, but that was their next. Oh yeah, sorry. No. I'm confusing. I'm confusing the continuity. It was Young Justice came.
Young Justice was in between them. Yeah.
Yeah. So they canceled Young Justice for that crap. Never mind. All right, now I got it right. All right, now I'm good. And now you know part of the reason why I hate Teen Titans Go.
But hey, well, Young Justice is back now, so
it doesn't heal the wound. Like, yeah, we got the Dark Knight trilogy, but Batman and Robin still exist, so it doesn't heal the wound.
Oh my goodness! But
continue.
So if you remember in season five of that show, they gave us the Doom Patrol and they showed us flashbacks to Beast Boy's time with the Doom Patrol.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering whether they're going to establish that Beast Boy was, and this is something I thought about, but I also wanted to reference, I think Scott brought this up on the Suicide Squad cast recently.
Yeah, Scott's a smart guy. Yeah, I like Scott.
Yeah, absolutely.
Shout out to Scott. We're going to have him on again soon in a very special episode that you guys won't see coming. Well, if you go back and listen to some of our podcasts, you might see it coming, but if you don't, you won't see it coming.
I totally agree with him here in that what I think is going to happen is that they're going to do flashbacks to Beast Boy's time with the Doom Patrol. Of course, it's a Berlanti show, so we know that flashbacks will probably occur at some point.
Yeah.
I think we'll basically see that the Doom Patrol is Beast Boy's first superhero team, and that maybe we'll see them in present day, but then we'll also see flashbacks to Beast Boy's time with them. So I think that would be really cool to see.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, and they did a really cool job with them on the Teen Titans animated series. So
interesting idea. But I'm excited. And so they've cast an actor for one of the roles, correct?
They have, yes. They have cast Bruno Beecher as the chief, aka Niles Calder. And yeah, I am not familiar with this actor. I don't think, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with him either, but looking at him from still picture and looking at the comics, aside from a different color hair, he looks like the character. So I'm good with it. Like I said, I'll trust. You know, one thing that the DC shows have never let me down on is casting. That has never been an issue with any of the DC shows for me. So I will give them the benefit of the doubt on every piece of casting that they perform. So I'm good with it.
Yeah, me too. I trust them too at this point. So I'm excited to see what he brings to the role.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, next up, we have some very exciting news. We don't get to talk about news when it comes to Smallville very often these days, given that it's been 7 years since the show went off the air.
We could go back in time and then talk about, you know, news.
Barry, where are you?
Yeah.
Barry, Wave Rider crew?
Yeah.
Rip Hunter, you there?
But
anywhere?
Since we can, let's talk about what we do have.
Let's talk about what we do have. That sounds good because, yes, let's take advantage of it while we do have some Smallville news, which is that the Smallville Pop Funko Pop figures that they're making, we have some photos of them, and you're able to pre-order them via Entertainment Earth now, which I did last night. I got two of them. I'll wait to tell you which two I got until we talk about which pops that they've released now. So, okay, here's what we got, Adam. Here's what we got. This is very, very exciting. We've got a Clark Kent ripping open his shirt like in the final scene of the series finale.
Yeah.
We've got a shirtless Clark Kent like when he was tied up as the Scarecrow in the pilot. So
yeah,
that's cool.
with the red painted S on it. Yeah.
Yes. So we've got a pilot Clark and we've got a finale Clark. So it covers the whole span of the show's history, which is really cool.
Yeah, they've done 10 seasons in two pops. Yeah.
Then we've got Lex Luthor in his white presidential suit with a gun.
Yeah.
Then we've got that is Clark Kent again. I'm going through the picks. I remember that. I don't even. We got a Lois Lane one.
Yes.
And we've got a Green
my
Arrow one.
and just to go along with the theme, Erica Durant's Lois Lane one, which is my Earth One wife. Since we're keeping track of my delusions.
Wait, aren't we? Hold up, aren't we on Earth One?
No, I call it Earth Prime.
Okay, so we're on Earth Prime.
Yeah, in my headcanon, this is Earth Prime.
Okay,
it's
so we're not
shitty,
on Earth
I'll be
One.
Honest with you. But Earth One is great because I'm, you know, I've got my wife is Erica Durant. Earth Two is Margot Robbie, as we've established, and Earth Three is Gal Gadot. I haven't investigated Earth 4, 5, and 6, but I'll come up with something. Over the course of this podcast, we'll learn who Earth 4, 5, and 6 are as we go along. But continue.
Yes, yes. Well, those are the five pops that we've got. I've heard some conflicting reports. Some say, I think Krypton Site is saying that they're coming out in April, but then when I pre-ordered mine on Entertainment Earth, it said they weren't coming out till May. I guess I'll go ahead and say who I pre-ordered. You know what? Take a guess at the two that I pre-ordered, Adam.
Okay, I'm going to say Finale Clark and Lex.
You're very close, Adam. I actually got the pilot Clark
okay.
and Lex. Because for me, I've said it before, the early seasons are my favorite of Smallville, for the most part, with the exception of season 7, which is in my top 3 seasons. But other than that, I prefer the early season. So I was like, when I was debating which Clark I was going to get, I was like, you know what? I prefer the early season, so I'll get the pilot episode Clark. So I got those two. There's some glaring omissions here. In my opinion, first and foremost would be Lana.
Oh,
so,
they're smart.
No, Adam I know
they,
you don't.
They took it.
Listen, Adam, I know you don't like Lana, but let's be honest. She was a huge
part
of that
show.
No,
I'm clarifying. Hold on. No, see, you're wrong. In the early seasons, I like her just fine.
So then why? But then why are you shitting on her now?
I'm shitting on the I'm shitting on the way they wrote her later on. That's what I'm shitting on.
So do you agree that she should have had a pop here?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I'm just.
Okay.
I'm just yanking your chain. But yeah. No. She should have had a, yeah.
So yes. I feel that.
But you know
Lana,
they're gonna do like a phase two and they're gonna put her in.
Yes. There. Yeah. She better be in wave two is what I'll say. And of course, there's also some other. I feel like Chloe should be in wave two, probably two, and Lionel should be in wave two. Those were two that Craig Byrne pointed out that are glaring omissions for him here. I'd love to see a Jonathan and Martha one too. So there's a lot, but first and foremost, I do feel that Lana should have been part of wave one, just because she was. I mean, she was there from the very start. Whereas like we've got Green Arrow and Lois here. Who Green Arrow didn't show up till season 6. Lois didn't show up till season 4. So I feel like in the wave one they should have had Lana, but
I think they're just spacing it out to keep fans like you know coming back for more. That's a good point.
That's a good point. Overall though, I can't complain too much. I'm happy for whatever we got, and I cannot wait for my Clark and Lex ones to come. I'm so excited. I hope because I obviously met Michael Rosenbaum at Dragon Con last year. If he's here again this year, I might try and take my Lex pop to see if I can get it signed by him at Dragon Con this coming year, because I think that would be awesome. And who knows, maybe Tom Welling will show up too, because didn't he take him to another con? Didn't he convince him to go with him to another con recently this year?
Yeah, some other convention, yeah.
So maybe Tom Welling will show up this year too. Anyway, I'm so excited.
Don't hold your breath.
I won't. But hopefully Michael Rosenbaum will be back at least. But I'm so excited. You know, Smallville merchandise, I can't wait to get some more of it. So I think this is awesome. Yeah. What about you? Are you?
I'm nothing against these, but I'm not really a Funko guy in general.
Oh, okay.
So, but I'm. It's cool that they have a line.
So are you not planning? You're not planning to get any of these?
Well, I've never had any of them because they've never been my thing. So probably not. But hey,
okay.
It's cool that they're out there for sure.
Yeah.
For collectors that do get. I know my friend is another friend of mine is a big collector of these things. So.
Okay.
I'm sure he'll be getting in on it.
I'm not like a huge Funko Pop collector. Like I know some people who are like collect so many and it's like that's awesome. But I do have a fair amount. I've got some Arrow ones. I get a lot of them from the, because I have subscribed to Legion of Collectors, which, here's some little tidbit of news. They're closing down their, you know what Legion of Collectors is, Adam?
Yeah.
Okay. They're closing down their, I just got an email actually, I think yesterday or today, that they're closing down their like subscription box thing, and they're going to do it through some retailer. So you're going to have to actually go to a store or whatever to pick them up starting now. So they recently, like a couple months ago probably, they said that they were closing down their annual subscriptions. Now they're saying they're not even going to do the monthly ones anymore. The bi-monthly ones. They're stopped doing them online, so they ship them to you. They're stopped doing that, and they're going to do them through some retailer that they haven't announced yet. So I don't know how I feel about that. But at least we can still get them. Well, at least it's
you have to get off your ass and go to the store. That's all there is to it.
Yeah. So hopefully it'll just that's all it is, and that's the only thing that's changing about it. But there's also the World's Finest Collector's Box, which is a little more expensive, that they started doing a couple. I think they're like three boxes in on that now, so I might try checking that out too. But anyway, I get a lot of the Funko Pops from the Legion of Collectors. Like I'm just looking around my room right now. I got a Bane and Lex Luthor one from there. I got Wonder Woman and Dr. Poison from the Legion of Collectors. I've got a lot of Catwoman ones. I've got a Batman Animated Series Catwoman one.
I'm not surprised at all.
I've got two Bombshells Catwoman ones, one of which I've got sitting right next to my Justice League Batman pop, so that they can be happy together on my shelf. The two engaged couple happy together is what I'm trying to say on my shelf.
Isn't that nice? And you can be the flower girl. All right, let's move. All right. So have we covered the news? Is that it?
Yes, that is it. That is it for the news for this episode.
Awesome.
Oh my goodness. Okay.
All right, let's get into the.
Guess what, Adam?
It's Batman Annual number 2.
Yes.
This came out last year. It's going to be a year by the time I get this.
Oh my goodness.
By the time we get to this review.
It came out in November.
Yeah, I was being.
So,
yeah.
Only, let's see, 3 months it's been out. Adam, I'm so excited, dude.
Well, let's talk about it. So,
let's talk about it.
Give us the details.
In terms of
the writer, the artist, so what's the deal here? Who's the...
Yes.
Who are the brains behind this operation?
The brains behind this masterpiece. This, I'll seriously, just right off the top, let me get this out of the way.
Again, you're blowing your load before the end. I mean, why don't you save that for final thoughts? You're blowing your load right away, you know. It's like a Marvel trailer. They show you everything in the
I need to give credit to these creators, because I consider this the greatest work of fiction I've ever read. Right. This comic book, I want to be buried with this comic book. Is what it comes down to.
I'll mark that down for a later date. You know,
thank you. Yeah, keep that in mind.
You want it CGC graded as well? Just, you know.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Why not? Why not?
Okay. Well, leave the money aside, and I'll have that done for you. It's good.
Okay. So who you've got attached to this? Of course, written by the greatest Batman writer of all time, Tom King. Art by his collaborator on the Batman Elmer Fudd special, Lee Weeks, yep, for pages 1 to 30 and the cover, and then Michael Lark for pages 31 to 38. Colored by Elizabeth Breitweiser for pages 1 to 30 and June Chung from pages 31 to 38. Lettered by Darren Bennett, assistant editor Maggie Howell, and editor Jamie S. Rich.
All right, cool. Now, without reading us the entire book. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. There are essentially two stories at work here.
Yes. Yes. Give us
a brief synopsis of the two stories.
Okay. Well, basically,
highlight the word brief while you're doing it.
Brief. I don't think that brief and Jordan talking about Bat-Cat should be force yourself in the same.
Nobody wants to hear you read the story.
No. I'm not gonna. So you just want me to give a very brief synopsis before
we
get into
it.
That's
correct. Then we can start talking about it. We just dissect. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I can do that. I'll get more in depth later. But I can refrain for just a second. Okay, so the first part of the story is when Batman and Catwoman are younger, and basically Catwoman breaks into the Batcave, steals the Batmobile. She continues throughout this part breaking into Wayne Manor, and basically she has a few run-ins with Bruce, and then we get to their first kiss, which is in Selina's apartment, and then we cut to then when they're older and Bruce gets a diagnosis that he's terminally ill, and then he's dying, and then we get basically their last kiss, and we see him pass away, and I guess that's where I'll leave it before I get into more details. But that's the general. It's a chronicle of the Bat-Cat relationship from their first kiss to their last, which will come
Yeah,
out
but it
later.
doesn't cover the whole relationship. It just focuses on those pretty much those two moments,
Yes, yes.
per se. So,
Yeah.
yeah, okay. So, what I'll say is, I when I first read this, I love the issue. Great story. And then when I read it again this morning, I felt the same way. And what I liked about it is that it he in chronicling and maybe not obviously not their first encounter, but an early encounter.
Yeah.
You basically I love that Tom King plays with not plays with but acknowledges the history of the two characters by them sort of once. They sort of put a pause on the cat and mouse relationship before they actually kiss and whatever. They're talking about they're reminiscing about their first meeting, and Batman's convinced that it was on a boat, referencing
Yes.
one of her first or her first appearance in the early comics.
Yeah, in Batman number one in
It,
1940, yeah, her
right,
very first appearance.
right,
Which
exactly.
has the infamous which has
Oh, that line
the
makes yeah. You could reference that line because it makes me laugh. I love it. It's
infamous
great. It's so
quiet,
malevolent.
quiet,
It's so
quiet.
hilarious and misogynistic that it's.
The most absurd line in the history of Batman. It is ridiculous. I still can't believe this is actually in a comic book. Quiet or Papa Spank. I'm just like, hey, listen, Catwoman's first appearance, I love it, but that one line, I'm just like,
Listen,
can we just.
they're a kinky couple. There's a lot of spanking going on up
I'm
there.
like, there's. Can we just. I'm like, that's a great first appearance for Catwoman. Can we just eliminate that panel, though? I'm like, how is
It's
that even.
part of history and it's part of the times. It is what it was.
Oh my God, that was ridiculous.
So Batman remembers the boat
Yes.
as their first meeting. Catwoman remembers meeting him on the street, which to me was a reference to Frank Miller's Batman Year One.
Yes, exactly.
And I love the
Exactly. And that.
fact that Tom King basically went from 1940 to 19 to the late 80s in one or mid 80s in one in one panel.
Oh, it's great because it references the long history of their relationship, and it's something that he's played with a lot during his run, because we had them go back and forth about it in Rooftops as well, and then we get it here at in the beginning when they're young, and then when they're older, they're still years and years later, they're still debating about.
And the other another cool thing for me is that there's a aside from that, nod to history, there's this sense that because when Catwoman steals the Batmobile and then later, several times breaks into Wayne Manor. Bruce slash Batman feigns this, feigns being upset about,
Yes,
that he's been bested.
but you could
But
tell he's loving it.
yeah, oh yeah, he loves every minute of it. So, I love the whole flirtatious aspect of the chase.
Because he lets her keep doing it. I mean, she says later on, she's like, "You could have figured out where I was after I left the first mouse, and yet you just kept letting me come back." And it's, oh, I love it.
So I love that, and then but then also what I loved about it was the deeper stuff when she breaks into the safe and finds the pearl. And he starts reminiscing about how that it was his mother, and she died, and you know, Calum says she knows because she knows that he's Bruce Wayne, and everybody knows about Bruce Wayne's parents.
And what I love about that is that when Batman tells her she died, and Catwoman says, I know, and he says, everyone knows, and she says, yes, everyone knows, and she says, but I know. And what she means by that, at least this is how I interpreted it, and I think it's so beautiful, is everybody knows that his parents died.
Yeah.
But she knows in the sense that she knows the pain he experienced.
Yeah.
She understands what that did to him. And this goes back to my whole thing with the Batcat relationship, how they understand each other in ways that other people can't. Because if you notice, they know when she says that the third time, really the second time, actually, I should say, it's in bold, but I know, indicating that she means it in a different way than other people.
Because she experienced, not the same thing, but a similar experience because her mom left her.
I was astray. I was alone, like you.
And so that aspect of it, as much as they're on, they're sometimes on opposite ends of the spectrum, him being, the quote unquote hero and her being the quote unquote villain sometimes. I'm saying something. It's a fact. Whether you like it or not, she's been portrayed as a villain. It's a, you can't say no. Like Lego Batman, because it's a fact.
Like Lego Batman.
Yeah. I'm telling you a fact that you just have to accept. Whether you like that or not, it's a fact. What I'm trying to say is, despite that sometimes differentiation, that there is a sameness about that. That like you say, that, and that's how they're more in tune with each other than most people. So I love the emphasis of we're the same. Despite our differences. I also loved the whole explanation of when he says, why do you dress up as a cat? She says, because they're so soft, everybody loves cats. And then she's like, why do you dress up as a bat? Nobody likes bats. And he's like, no, that's the point. I want to scare, my whole thing is to scare people. So it's really reinforcing, his mode is to put fear into people. Whereas her, in her thievery, what I think the cat outfit does is it lulls people into a sense of almost security, if you will. And then she's able to exploit that.
I didn't really put two and two together in terms of that, but that is. That's brilliant, Adam.
Thank you. I try. once in a blue moon, I come up with something good.
Hey, well, give yourself some more credit than that.
I'm patting myself on the back. People can't see it. What can I tell you?
I love that she says, "I'm not scared of you," because she doesn't view him again. She understands him, whereas other criminals, they are scared by that. She sees right through that mask.
But then I also see not only that, but I also see that as an admission from her saying that she loves him without saying the actual words,
Yes.
Because she says, doesn't that scare you? And he's like, yeah, because, he's never allowed himself to open up to that possibility since his parents' death. So.
Yes. And I thought it was so sweet right after that. She says, so you're scared of a cat? And he says, shouldn't I be? And she goes, of course not. Remember, everyone likes cats. Yeah.
And then there's the whole part about I just want to go back a second.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
The whole part about when she steals the Batmobile.
Yes.
It's significant because that's the first time that in the comic and the point of history that this takes place. Mm-hmm. That is the first time he's officially named the Batmobile. Alfred makes mention of it.
Which is interesting because I don't – maybe it's just – what I'm curious about is it just the first time Alfred's heard him call him that? Because if you see in that scene with Porky the Pig, he says he calls it the Batmobile before Batman even does. When the Batmobile crashes into the – which is awesome because this – and I was going to reference this later. This is this implies that the Batman Elmer Fudd special is canon because we see Porky's bar there.
I think it's a loose wink to that book.
Sure.
Which we, you know, now that you mentioned, I really love that book. We should do a review of that on a different podcast.
Oh, sure. It's very good. It's very good.
That's for a different podcast.
Porky, when the Batmobile crashes in, he goes, "The Batmobile?"
Yeah.
But
I think it's the first time that Alfred's probably heard the name.
Yes, exactly.
And that's what I took from it. And what I want to say, what else I want to say, and she's able to outsmart him in the sense that, you know, when she says, "Oh, I was nice and I called the cops on myself," aren't they going to be shocked when they see me, you know, leap out the window? And aren't they going to be even more shocked to see Bruce Wayne follow me out the window?
Right? Yes!
So that she's outsmarted him in the sense that he can't chase her because if he does, then he's blown his cover.
Yes, and I love her I love her outsmarting him in that way, and you know, getting the one up on.
But also they don't make Batman look stupid in the sense that he was able to track her because of the lead tracings in the poop of the mouse that tied back to the paint of her apartment. So
it was genius. Yeah. Like that's like this very like specific Batman detective thing that he does.
But they're able to do it in a way where they make Catwoman look smart, but they also don't make Batman look stupid. Like they nullify the idea of she made Batman look stupid. Didn't.
Well, because they each get a one up on one another.
Right.
Yeah.
And what I really want to mention too about the first part before we start delving into the second part. Is that I really, really like the art in the first half because they really key in on, especially with the Batmobile design and Catwoman's outfit. Not the early days, but somewhere in between.
Catwoman's outfit is very Batman the Animated Series inspired.
Right.
With the belt.
Yeah, and I think what they've done is what the artist, it was Lee Weeks for the first half.
Yeah.
What's happened is he's melding, you know, different eras at once here. Like he's got, you know, the Batman animated series. He's got the Batmobile, which is not quite the 66 Batmobile, but it's a close facsimile of it. So
yeah,
he's playing with different eras in one issue.
Sure. I mean, this whole issue is very much it pays homage to so many different aspects of Batman history and Catwoman history. Like,
And then when you move on to the second half.
Hold on. We can't move on from the first part yet.
What did you forget?
Well, I didn't forget anything. I was letting you finish though before I went in depth on it.
Okay, go ahead.
So, I've got it open, so I'm just sort of planning on going through it as just to talk as I go, as I flip through each page.
All right, go ahead.
So, I love her. So, when we first see her step into the Batmobile, first of all, it reminded me a lot of Batman Forever when Dick steals the Batmobile.
Sure.
And when Alfred calls him, and, you know, in Batman Forever, you've got the whole thing, not that car, the other car.
Right.
But, you know. Batman's like interrogating this guy and he's like, "I'm busy." He's like, "We've got a problem with the car." And of course, Catwoman crashes into Porky's. And I do love that nod to Batman Elmer Fudd as I said, and this is where we get the first mouse that Catwoman leaves him.
Sure.
And I just think that's really, it is, she's playing a game with him. And that's what I love about it is that's sort of, it's her message that, to Batman that they are playing a game, I feel like, with the mouse.
Sure.
It's like this sweet little message that she's giving him that, you know, we're having fun, Bat.
Yeah.
And Batman's just reaction, just very, 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 matter-of-factly, he's just like, "There's a mouse. She left a mouse." And, you know, it goes squeak, squeak, and I love that. So one thing that really stuck out to me in this issue is Alfred and Bruce's banter back and forth with one another.
Mm-hmm.
Before I even get to that, there's the scene where Bruce is talking to Alfred. He's he apparently he just fought the Riddler and Alfred. There's this really poignant line to me. And here's what I would say about this line. Bruce says to Alfred, the look on his face as he said it, as he was taken away, he was satisfied, content. You know that look, Alfred. And Alfred says, yes, Master Bruce, I believe I saw it once, many years ago. And to me, this line, of course, Alfred's talking about Bruce, is that he's saying he hasn't seen him satisfied or content in years. And obviously, like, that's what I love so much about this, because Bruce hasn't been satisfied and content for years. He, again, and I've brought this up so many times on this podcast, that Selina is the one who reminds him how to be happy again. She is the first person who gets through to him, who he's able to open his heart up to. Who gets him to do that after his parents' death. She's sure. The only one who's able to get him to do that. And so to me, this is Alfred saying this is like, this is obviously before Bruce has gotten involved with Selina. And so it's like, this is sort of a tease for what's to come. It's like, okay, so Alfred tells Bruce, I haven't seen that look on you, essentially. He doesn't say this, but this is what he's implying. I haven't seen that look on you in so many years. And so to me, it's like, then Selina, it's sort of a foreshadowing, because then Selina's going to make him feel that way again. It make Bruce feel that way again. And I just want to talk about, there's a scene between Bruce and Selina that I've always dreamed about that this makes me think of. And I've always wanted to see a scene where Bruce and Selina are together, I guess, in the Batcave or whatever, right? And I've always wanted to see Alfred walk in and hear Bruce laughing at something Selina says and just drop his plate of food or whatever that he's carrying down to him, because he hasn't heard Bruce laugh since before his parents died. Okay. And I think that would be – would that not be a great scene? I've always thought that would be an incredibly powerful scene.
Yeah, sure.
So that's just something I've always dreamed about, is a scene like that. I don't know how it came to my mind.
Well, that could still happen later on, you know, as the wedding preparations or somewhere thereafter. So it's not.
Oh, sure. Yes. And if Tom King did a scene like that, I would just love it, because I think that would be a really powerful way to show what Selina does for Bruce and how she changes him and how she shows him how to be happy again. So I love that. And I love, this is a little bit more detective work that we get in the scene. Like I said, this story does give us a few moments of Batman really being a great detective, where we see him jumping to this. He's talking about the Riddler's riddle, and he makes sort of an almost Batman 66-ish conclusion, where he gets all the way to this crazy, amazing conclusion that, Riddler's talking about what has been played, and Bruce is like, Francis Watt, the second baseman for the Gotham Knights, didn't he miss his last start? And it's like, how did he even think of that? But it's amazing, because it just shows how great a detective Bruce is, right? Mm-hmm. And so Bruce, okay, here's what I was talking about with Alfred, just with his snarky comments that I love so much, is Bruce is like,
with the rat droppings. Yeah.
Oh, no. Yes, with that I wasn't even getting to that yet. That's a little bit later. What I was thinking was when Bruce says the pen is gone, the pen he was writing with, and Alfred goes, is it, shall I alert the Superman, or might look under so
far. And that was kind of a nod to I thought that was a nod to BVS in a way, because, you know, when they after the Bruce falls into the well, and they cut to the Man of Steel scene,
and yes,
18 months later when the world got introduced to the Superman,
yes,
so it was a little nod to that.
That is a great point, and I really love that, the idea of calling him the Superman. There's something that's very – just like when Batman has been referred to in the past. I know in the early days he was. Obviously, this is what they referred to him as in the animated series, The Batman, when he's referred to as the Batman. Yeah, I just feel like it adds this, you know, I don't know, it adds something. So I think that was cool. And, of course, this is probably in the early days of Superman, because this is very early in Batman's career. So it makes sense that he'd say the Superman. That was cool.
Yeah.
And Bruce is just like, she's here. And, of course, this is something you were talking about, Adam, earlier, how he's feigning this, like, intensity. Like, he's got to catch this criminal, but he's loving it, you know. And he's just this is where he starts racing after her through Wayne Manor, right?
Sure.
And so, you know what this reminded me of, Adam?
What's that?
Do you remember the scene in Gotham in season one when Bruce and Selina had a food fight in Wayne Manor?
I do.
And I love that scene so much, just them being playful together in Wayne Manor.
And just to bring up that scene, I remember when I saw it, and she's like, What wasn't that scene? But it was. I think it was during the episode or a couple episodes before. She's like, "Have you ever kissed a girl?" He's like, "No." And she's like, "Do you want to kiss me?" And he's like, "Why would I do that?" And I'm thinking, "You're an idiot. Kiss her, you moron." I remember yelling at the TV.
There was one point when he says to him, "Do you want to kiss me?" And he says, "Yes, I do, but I can't help feeling you have some ulterior motive for asking me that."
And I was like, "Do it anyway, moron."
Oh my god, I love that.
Yeah,
I love that.
Continue. Yeah.
But I love Bruce and Selena's banter here in this scene as they're running through Wayne Manor. And he's like running atop the kitchen table, which I feel bad for Alfred because Alfred's going to have to clean up all those silverware he knocked everywhere probably. But he's running across the kitchen table after Selena. He's like, "Stop." She's like, "No, yeah, I'm going to catch you." "No, you're not." "This is ridiculous that you think you can catch me." "I agree." I just love it so much. Just them, their banter. And you talked about this before, she's about to jump out the window, and she talks about, and I love this, just, again, Tom King, the way he writes Selena is, there's something, he just gets it, it just clicks with Tom King, how he writes her, when she says, I wanted to be nice, you know, after what happened with the car, so I called the cops on myself before I broke in, which I think is very generous, like, is that not hilarious?
Yeah.
So she basically gets him to stop and not chase her because she's like, if you chase me, obviously the cops will realize or they'll be very confused as to how Bruce Wayne was able to do that. But this was what was interesting to me here is that this is my question is, if this basically says that Bruce revealing his identity to Selena and Hush is no longer canon, which I don't have a problem with necessarily as much as I love Hush. But it's interesting to note that this issue sort of confirms that that's no longer canon.
But we don't know that this issue is canon, though. See, that's where the line is blurred.
I think Tom King has been very coy about whether this issue is canon or not. But I think that this, at the very now, regardless, this whole issue is my headcanon because it's exactly how I'd want their relationship to end. I couldn't imagine a better ending. This is exactly what I've always wanted. But I think at the very least, even if the whole thing is not canon, I think the first part is definitely canon,
I'll explain my thought process as to why I don't necessarily think it's quote unquote canon.
Okay.
When we start the second half of the book, because
okay.
what I have to say might spoil, you know. We'll jump to that, so I'll just wait.
Okay, but you're saying you're saying you don't even think the first part would be canon, even if that's the case.
Not DC current DC Rebirth universe canon. No.
Interesting. Okay. Yes. Well, I'm excited to hear you. I'm excited to hear where you're coming from when we get to the second part. But in my like I said though, for me, this is no matter what, this is my headcanon for how their relationship ends. Like this is my definitive version.
Sure.
Of yeah. Catwoman jumps out after the police, and I love this. She tells Bruce thanks for the pen.
Yeah.
And then you just see Bruce looking out the window, and you hear all the cops' reactions to like, and I love that it's left to your imagination, like yeah. How she's evading them.
And all you see is Bruce smirking because he's like, "You guys have no hope."
Yes. And all the cops are like, you can tell they're like in disarray. They're trying to figure out how did she, can anyone, that's not, move people, move. They can't get her. And then she, guess what she does? She leaves another little mouse for Bruce. You see, I just think that's so sweet that she's leaving these little
mice. Yeah, sure.
Then
Alfred has to clean up real sweet.
Yeah. And this is what you were referencing earlier, the quip he has about the, first he has one that says when Batman says that she's here, Alfred says, "I'll hide the pencils." But then he says, and this is what you were alluding to, "Please let her know if she leaves another mouse, it's only proper to leave some money to feed the bloody thing."
Yeah, that was funny. That was
really
funny.
Yeah. Oh, it was so funny. Okay, and then we get to the scene that I know you talked about a little bit earlier, but I want to talk about it some more. This amazing, amazing, amazing scene of Catwoman at the safe and you can tell Batman, like, what I love about this, when he confronts her at the safe, like, what I love about it is that you can tell that he's coming at it he's not approaching. He, like, this is the thing about her. Even though she's a criminal, he never approaches her in the same way because she's not. She's different. I mean, he loves her obviously, but she's, and even though she's technically a criminal, he's at least at this point, you could tell his approach is different.
But of course he approaches her different because he's infatuated with her, right? So
yes, and he says I love it because it's so you really see this here because it's such a contrast to how we'd normally approach somebody who's breaking into Wayne Manor, which is just all he says is, it would be best if you surrendered peacefully. And I just love it because you can see, like, there's this, it shows this, like, warm side to Bruce that, again, Selena's the only person he can get she's the only person that can bring that out of him. And so we get this, and basically she finds the pearl, and he explains to her that it was his mother's. And we get to the scene that, I'm not going to go back into it, but where he explains that the whole thing with, where I explained about how she knows, she understands him in a way that no one else can, and she really understands the pain, not just the fact that his mother died, but the pain along with it. And here's the thing that we didn't talk about earlier when you were discussing it, but I really wanted to make sure we touched on, is this exchange that they have, where, and this comes back up later in the book. But I want to first talk about it here, where Catwoman says, and I'll go ahead and read it because it's so beautiful and it's so tragic, but it's so important to their relationship and to why they're able to. I'm just gonna read the quote.
Sure.
After they left, after a while, did you ever have that moment where you don't know anything else? Where you almost like this life. You like being by yourself. And then you think maybe it's better. Maybe it's okay. And then you hate yourself. You hate everything because it's okay. And you just see Bruce. I feel like you see Bruce's expression to that. And I feel like that's just him realizing, like, that's the moment. She says that and he's like, oh my God, she understands. She knows that's exactly how I felt before. And so it's like this is this point where they connect and he really realizes just how well she understands him. And I love that because it's this pain where it's this weird thing that, like, I feel like she's the only one who's ever understood that about him. And I think it's so beautiful there. So I wanted to make sure that we touched on that. And, of course, it comes back up later and we'll talk about that when it comes back up.
And I thought, just to point out, I thought that whole exchange of, you know, when she's talking about her mother leaving and whatnot,
mm-hmm.
it was very reminiscent of the similar exchange that Bruce and Selina had on Gotham when she was telling him about when she opened up about the mother when she came back and then she left.
Yeah,
yeah,
that that's a great point. That's a great point. And I think also a little bit in the scene in Gotham by Gaslight, actually, when they're at the window talking, that scene that I love, so my favorite scene in that movie when they're in the window talking about you know, they're where they came from, their origins, and that's a scene where I really feel in that movie that they sure. it was indicative of how well they understand each other, and I feel it's a similar thing here. Yeah. So then we get to that whole exchange that we already talked about with the whole thing. I like cats. Everyone likes cats. They're soft. Who likes bats? So that whole thing that was just really it just makes me smile. It really does. And so I loved that scene. And of course. Then she gets to the point where she touches his belt and it releases the smoke bomb, so she's able to escape, which I loved. And Batman's talking to Alfred and he's like, dude, he's got all these locks that are supposed to be in place so that she can't get out of there. And he's like, are they holding up? And Alfred's
she's
like,
broke
no.
them all. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is great because again, it just shows how much of a master thief Catwoman is, how great she is at what she does. So I thought that was awesome. And of course, she leaves another little mouse, and it's holding the pearl, which I thought was so cute.
Yeah, well, she didn't take the pearl, which is, you know.
Yes, yeah, of course. And that, you're right. That's one thing that's really important here, because it shows that she cares about Bruce, and she doesn't want to, she understands what that means to him, and she doesn't want to, you know, she doesn't want to take that from him.
Sure.
Okay, now we get to a scene with Alfred where he's feeding the mice, which is pretty funny at first. But there's something I want to touch on here, which is the song that Alfred's singing, which Tom King has essentially established as Bruce and Selina's song, essentially. Which I love that Tom King has given them a song, because I feel like every great love story should have a song associated with it. You know what I'm saying?
Sure.
So, and this song, I don't know if you ever looked up this song or you heard the song before, because I'd never heard this song before, but I looked it up.
I've never heard it, no.
Okay, it's a song from, I think, the 1920s, and it's not really my style of music in terms of the I don't care for the song that much to listen to it, but sure. In terms of the lyrics, I freaking love the lyrics of this song that Alfred's singing here, and the title of this issue, which is Some of These Days, is an excerpt from this song, and basically some of the lyrics of the song are, some of these days you'll miss your honey. Some of these days, you'll feel so lonely. You'll miss my hugging. You'll miss my kissing. You'll miss me, honey, when you go away. And, of course, this plays into the second part very heavily of the story, which is really sad. But I think it's such the lyrics of this song are so perfect for this issue. And it's bittersweet, but it is a beautiful – they are beautiful lyrics. And I think it's really brilliant the way Tom King incorporated them into the story.
Yeah, I have no arguments there.
Yeah. So, awesome. So then we get to the scene where Batman and Catwoman, they confront each other on the roof of Wayne Manor. And, okay, first of all, I love that Catwoman says, you really should appreciate all of this. You ever try palming a live mouse? They're very squirmy. Like, again, just the way Tom King writes her, like, just their banter back and forth, and the way she's got all these, like, sort of quips. I don't know if quip is the right word, but you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, for sure. I think that's the right word.
Okay, all right. Hey, I guess the reason I was hesitant is because people call it like Spider-Man. What he does are quips. So this is different, but it's like, yeah, it's similar.
Yeah, it's sort of like a taunting kind of.
Yes, but sweet. She's
a taunting flirtation, I guess.
Yes, yes. There's something sweet about them for sure. And what she says to him is, and I don't know, I've gone back and forth on my different read-throughs of this issue on how I want to interpret this exactly. So I'm a little bit curious to hear your thoughts on this, and I'll tell you how I've sort of interpreted this, which is that she says, you're weak. You need to be better. I have to make you better. I have to teach you where you're weak, or you're going to die. And the way I've chosen to interpret this is that she's actually, in a sense, at least there's a point. I don't think this is her main goal for why she's doing what she's doing here. Obviously, it's not the main reason that she's going to do this. Obviously, she wants to see him. She's in love with him, and she's doing this because she loves being with him, and she loves, you know, playing these games with him. But I think there might be some truth to what she's saying here to him, which is, I think there's a part of her that does worry about him and that does worry about what he's doing and what he's – I mean, you see – she in a way that other people can't, she understands the compulsion he has to fight crime, but she still worries about him, and she still doesn't want him to get hurt, or she worries about him going up against the crazy criminals that he does, and she wants to make sure that he is well, that he's capable of, and that he stays, you know, alert, and that he stays and he's able to fight these dangerous criminals that he goes up against every night. So I was wondering what your interpretation of that.
I think that you're right. I think she is doing it in part to make sure that he's always ready to, you know, and aware and stays sharp. But because I think what she sees is that Batman is so laser focused that in his mind he's ready, he's done, he's always, you know, at this point in his war on crime, if you will. I don't know that he's experienced failure yet.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a sense of I've got this, a sense of overconfidence maybe, and so she's trying to everything she's doing in addition to, you know, getting closer to him and getting him to open up. But everything she's doing is to show him, look, I can get through your defensive. I found a way to beat you. I found your weak spots. Other people will too. So this is also an exercise, not only in flirtation, but to further it's almost like a training exercise, if you will.
Yeah. And well, so, well said, because yeah. It's like she's worried that if she can do it, maybe somebody else yeah. who actually because, wants remember, to hurt
at
him.
Because remember, at this point, there are no Robins. There's nothing. So, you know, Jason Todd hasn't died. So he hasn't experienced absolute failure just yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and she's worried. She's worried. She's like, if I can get through your defenses, somebody who actually wants to hurt you could do that, and I don't want that to happen. So you sure. need to step it up. Yeah, yeah. I'm with you, and I think that was you said it very well.
And I will say that the sequence where they are at on the rooftop of Wynn Manor echoes the because it's the rooftop and the rain. And all that echoes the proposal sequence.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. She runs away again. But I just want to dwell on this last part that she says. She says this part, well, I'll mention this too. Every time I see you, and I see you more than you know I see you, which I thought was awesome. And then she continues. She says, but under that, the cape, the mask, under there, you're still the poor little rich boy in the house on the hill, all that pain from being alone. And then here's the part that I love so, so much. She is the only person that would ever say this to Batman, and the only person that could ever see this in Batman. Because Batman, obviously, he tries to come off as very intimidating and menacing. And, of course, we learned earlier in the issue, she sees right through that. She's not scared of him. She says, you're still the sweet darling mouse who can't quite see the cat coming. And I love that so much. First of all, she's the only person that would ever view Batman as a sweet darling mouse. But it's because of the fact that she sees him in a way other people don't, as I've talked about. And I love that adds some significance, some more significance to her leaving the mouses. And I think that's just such a sweet line that just, again, it makes so much of this issue. As much as this issue does make me cry at times, it also makes me smile a lot. And that's one of those moments that I'm just smiling. It's beautiful. So anyway, then this is where I think this is implied to be the first where they really start calling each other Bat and Cat. Where he's running after her in the woods, he says, why do you care if I live or die? And she says, do you care if I live or die? Batman says, it's different. We're different. And she says, no, Bat, that's just it. That's all of it. Under there, we're just the same. And of course, it's because they understand each other in ways no one else can. They are the same in that they understand each other's pain, and they've both been through they've both suffered through these terrible tragedies in their childhood, and they've grown up in similar ways, and that they understand each other, and that that's how they connect, and they are the same. And then he responds. He starts calling her Cat, and she disappears in the woods, and he yells Cat, Cat, and then he realizes that she's gone, because guess what he finds on his shoulder is another one of those tiny little sweet darling mouses right there on his shoulder. I love that. Okay.
Yeah, I think by the fourth mouse it got redundant, but sure, yeah.
Well, she left one every time.
I know, but it got redundant. It got redundant after a while. It's like, all right, we get it.
Well, if she hadn't left a mouse, he'd think something was wrong. And she left them out.
I think Tom King may have a mouse fetish, but continue.
And she left the mouse because I think there was a part of her that wanted him to find her. So I think that she knew. I think yeah, she might have known
he had
that
done he was, it long before that. He just didn't act on it.
Okay, all right, that's true. That's
but
true.
Let's get to the apartment scene so we can move on, because this is taking way too long.
I told you.
You're essentially reading everybody the issue. Let's move it along.
Okay, all right. Well,
we're going to lose audience members if you keep reading them page by page.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, we're almost done with the first part, so I'll get to this apartment scene, because that's what's up next. She gets to her apartment. I love that Batman is just in the doorway, and he just says, squeak. And, I mean, that's just... I love that's the way he introduces himself there, and he talks about how he did his detective work using the souvenirs to find where she is. And I love, okay, this is just funny. This is another one of those exchanges sort of back and forth between Catwoman and Batman. She just goes, mouse poo. And he goes, yes, mouse poo. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay. So here's where the thing from and she talks about how it didn't take them four mice to four mice to produce the droppings, did it? You've known and you've been able to find me from the very beginning. And basically this makes you think, okay, yeah, so he's been holding off because he loves having her come over and play this game with her.
He's playing the game, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I love that. And he takes off his cowl. And here's where the thing from earlier comes back around, and I love this, because it's the whole thing she said about being alone and then thinking that you like being alone and then hating yourself because you like it. And he brings this back up. He takes off the cowl. She says, why? And he takes off the cowl. He says, because sometimes I like being alone, and then I hate everything because I like it. You saw me. I see you. She responds, great. Glad you get it. You and me, the two orphans lost, we see the weak in one another. And this is something that's going to play later in the issue, in the second part that we're going to talk about, where she asks him, you want to what? You want to help me? And he just says, no, I don't want to help you. And he brings her close to him. And then, oh my goodness, this page, this full panel splash page of them kissing in her costumes, in her apartment, with their masks off, finally, we see their first kiss. And of course, the whole theme of this issue is from the first kiss to the last, and we see this beautiful, I mean, this is right up there with the Bat-Cat kiss from Hush for me.
Yeah, I like the page a lot, but if I had to choose which I prefer, it would be the page from Hush.
The page from, is that because of the art or because of the moment in terms of?
Partly because a little bit of both, because Jim Lee is, it fluctuates a bit, but he is one of my top artists.
Sure. That I follow. Me too.
But also, I think because there was a lot of, like, there's history that's already built up between them when that happens, whereas here it's fairly early days, so it's just a different dynamic.
It is, and
that's why I prefer it, because there's layers of history behind it, as opposed to this is really the first one. You know what I mean?
I do think there's so much significance, though, too, to this being the first one, that this is their first kiss, and I love that about it.
I'm just saying I prefer the other one because of A, the artist, and B, the fact that there's history behind it.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I see, and I won't. This is one of those things that I've said it about
like, a few whether, different things. Whether they've done that before, that Hush kiss is irrelevant. I'm just saying. Not that it's irrelevant, but it's irrelevant in terms of it being my favorite, because to me, I like the fact that there's the history that's implied and that's behind it.
Sure. No, I totally understand that. And this is one of those cases where I won't argue you either way. Just like I always say that I won't argue anyone however order they put the Dark Knight trilogy in, because they're all three so amazing. I won't argue on anybody about whether they pick that kiss or this kiss as their favorite Bat-Cat kiss. But personally, I think I give the slight edge to this one, personally.
You do have a Tom King bias, so there's that as well.
I do have a Tom King. I'm not going to lie about that. I do. And, I mean, this is my favorite. Like I said, this is my favorite piece of fiction ever written.
Where I'm coming from also is the Hush storyline was essentially my reintroduction to picking up comics again.
Sure.
So there's that.
Okay. I mean, yeah, that's fair. I mean, I love Hush, too. I absolutely love Hush.
We do have to do a review of that, by the way.
Oh, absolutely. I'm all for that, man.
And also, just my plea to Warner Brothers Animation, do a Hush adaptation, damn it.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That would be awesome. They'd probably have to do a two-parter for that.
By the way, folks, I'm drinking coffee because Jordan is reading the whole thing and it's putting me to sleep. So I feel your pain if you're you're reading it through every page. Let's move it along.
Can we get
to the second half?
Hold on, I just want to give me one more minute with this page.
All right, hold on, wait, I'm timing it. Wait a sec.
All right. Okay, it won't be one. What?
Go, you have a minute.
Go. Less than a minute. Okay, I didn't literally mean.
I'm tanking. You're losing time. Go ahead.
Well, all I wanted to say, I just want to give my closing thoughts on this scene. It sort of ends the first part of this book. I thought it was just so beautiful, such a great call. We built to this part. Like, that's what I love about it. We built up to this part, and it's this beautiful, them finally, you know, explaining their feelings to one another, and we see this embrace and them kiss, and it's so beautiful. This page, I'm pretty sure the first time I read this, I just stared at this page for about 5 minutes before I even turned to the next page, because it's just so beautiful. And so, it's amazing. It's amazing. So I just wanted to give my closing thoughts, Adam, on that.
All right. Before we move on you managed to stay within the limits. So good for
okay.
you.
Okay. Well, great, great. And then we've got one more page before it gets to the second part. Which this does not count towards my minute, Adam. But basically they sort of pull away from the kiss, and he said, and it's just so sweet. He says hello, she says hello, and this is where we get the part about them debating about when the first time they met was. And I love this nod to they're paying homage to both versions of their first meeting, from Batman number one and from Batman year one. And so this is, again, like I said, it's something that's been carried from Rooftops. We got it in Rooftops. And then it's being this theme is being continued here. Well, actually, this takes place technically, if you're considering this canon, which I am, this takes place before Rooftops, but in terms of when it was published, after Rooftops. But Tom King continuing with this endless debate they have that, as we find out later in this issue, they're never going to resolve, but where they're debating whether they first met on the boat or on the street. And I just love this line from Batman. I just before we move on to the second part, I remember you on the boat when your mask came off. You are lovely. And just him hugging her in that scene. So I just, God, I love this scene. I love, oh, okay. We can move on to the second part now.
Okay. So the second part picks up with them. Excuse me. I'm choking now. the elderly versions of Bruce Wayne and Selina Kyle. What we find out is that they are at a doctor's office while they're continuing their debate about their first meeting. They are, you know, and we're basically what we find out is that the doctor has results, and they're not good results. Then we cut to Bruce and Selina walking, and you know, they're having a nice stroll through the streets. And I think she's recounting some of her early times, her early experiences as a thief.
No, he is.
Oh, is he?
Okay. He's talking about when he was training. I guess somewhere. I don't
know.
Yeah,
but then she chimes in with her experiences, I think, too, as well. But I think there's something about her in there as well.
Her experiences. I don't think so. I think it's just him talking about it.
Okay, maybe I dreamed it up. But anyway, he's talking, and I assume that it was he was talking about Nanda Parbat. It's never stated, but if I had to, you know, in my head canon.
Sure.
He's talking about training with Ra's al Ghul, but whatever. From Batman Begins.
Well, I don't think it was Ra's al Ghul, because he's talking about somebody who had a 3-pack a day habit, and
I don't give a shit who he's talking about. To me, it's the headcanon is
Well, hold on. You can't say it's the headcanon if he establishes that it's somebody else, though.
But I can ignore that line of dialogue and establish whatever the hell I want. It's my headcanon.
I feel like the definition of headcanon, though, is it's something that technically doesn't
happen in my head.
What?
Wait a second. Did you ever see Ra's al Ghul, Liam Neeson smoke? No, but the possibility existed off screen. He did. Chris Nolan just didn't want to waste time showing him smoke.
Fine. It's Rafe. Fine.
All right. So anyway, so what we end up finding out is that Bruce Wayne is the one that was diagnosed with the terminal illness, because we see him coughing and all that stuff, and he's getting weaker as the issue goes along.
Yeah.
I was surprised by this because I'll tell you what, the way they built it up before the reveal, I thought it was Calman that had the terminal illness.
Really? Okay. Interesting.
So I was thrown for a loop there.
Interesting.
And then, you know, we see him get sicker and sicker, and then she surrounds him, you know, the whole Bat family, so to speak, is surrounding at his bedside.
Yeah.
And then they say their goodbyes, and, you know, they share the last kiss. Yeah. And then it cuts to rooftop with the Bat signal that is...
Well, no, this was before that.
What?
The scene you're talking about with the Bat signal, this was before that final kiss and all.
Okay, but whatever. But I'm just jumping around. But anyway, so my point is, you have the whole Bat family there, and they share their whole kiss, which was I thought it was a cool moment that they managed to still make it an intimate Bruce and Selina moment while still including the entire Bat family. I thought it was well balanced.
Sure.
In terms of the rooftop, the Bat signal with basically Selina is talking with Batwoman, and she's talking about having had a meeting with Zatanna, who the gist of it is that they tried in exploring the possibility of through magic somehow saving Bruce Wayne, but Zatanna basically, through her search, said there's nothing we can do. Everyone has their time. And, you know, I think that's important because it underscores Batman's mortality, in that we classify him as a superhero, but in the strictest sense of the word, there's nothing super, you know, in terms of abilities or anything like that, about him, that he is in fact still a human being and subject to all our frailties and such.
Absolutely.
So I thought that was important, but even cooler to me was that Batwoman, that Selina Kyle was speaking to, was their daughter, which she refers to her as Helena. So this is now Helena Wayne / Helena Kyle, depending on what she uses as her last name. But I love this because, you know, I love the idea of the Huntress being a legacy, and being the daughter of Batman and Catwoman. I will not deny this. I will not sweep it under the rug. I love the far too short-lived Birds of Prey live action scene, the series, from 2003 on the CW, or what was then the WB. So I make no bones about that. And I also love remember when the New 52 was happening, there was a title called World's Finest with the alternate Earth's Power Girl and Huntress, which were the cousin of Superman and the daughter of Batman and Catwoman. I love that series. That was one of the few things that I thought the New 52 did right. So I'm so glad that on some level, the Helena Wayne version of the Huntress is back.
Except not as the Huntress, though.
Sorry, the Helena Wayne character. And I think it makes total sense that she would one day assume the mantle of Batwoman. I totally think that makes sense.
Sure.
I also think that it's really cool to see the Bat signal in the sky, and it is the shape of the Bat of the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yes, I loved that too. I thought that was a great nod. A
nice nod to Christopher Nolan.
And I think that there was something intentional there, which is that Christopher Nolan gave the happy ending. Yeah, sure, ending.
And I'll get to that because it brings up a good point. But I'll get to that in a second.
Okay.
Here's the reason why I don't think this book, this comic is in mainstream DC universe canon, because okay. there's a scene where Batman and, or Bruce and Selina are going to sleep, and he says, you know, somewhere out there, there's an alternate universe of me, universe version of me that doesn't age. When I die, I want you to find him. And correct me if I'm wrong, I think Bruce mentions Barry.
Yes, he does. Yeah. He does.
Get Barry to find him and be happy with him. That little, what seems like a throwaway line to me, says that this is an alternate DC universe, and Tom King, the rest of Tom King's run, where they are still going to get married, takes place on the main DC universe.
I don't see how you're coming to that conclusion from that line.
Because main DC continuity has never and will never age Bruce Wayne.
That's why we're doing a flash forward story, because it's never going to.
But hence the line saying, I think it's a clever, and we'll never know because Tom King will never tell us. But to me, I acknowledge that as okay. There's that version of continuity, which is the mainstream DCU, where he never ages, but they're still going to get married, whatever. Because he's saying, be happy with that fellow, will make you happy. In my head canon, him and Bruce, that Bruce and Catwoman are still going to get married.
But he says, I never got married. He says that on that Earth, he says there's another Earth where I never got old or married.
Right, but I still think he's going to end up, it's going to be on a different... I think that was the sly tip of the hat from Tom King, in my personal opinion, that that this is taking place on an alternate universe. Just my theory. But aside from that, the nod to Chris Nolan, I thought was great, because he gave us the Batman Catwoman, happily ever after ending.
Yeah.
But in all honesty, as much as I thought that aspect of Dark Knight Rises was cool, and I enjoyed that aspect of Dark Knight Rises, I prefer this comic's take on it, and here's why. Because whether you're just reading this issue as a one-off, or whether you're reading it as the entirety of, what Tom King is building, or if you're reading it with, years of Batman Catwoman continuity from writers and artists past, this happy end, or, well, not so happy because he dies, but,
Well, it's a bittersweet ending.
Right, but this, the fact that they end up together and live, until they're both in old age.
Yeah.
So in a sense, they have their happy ending. To me, this ending in this comic, and taking in continuity and all that into account, is much more earned to me than what we got in The Dark Knight Rises. Because The Dark Knight Rises, to me, him running off with Catwoman, while, because I read years and years of comic books, I get it. In the conception of that movie trilogy, he had just met Selina Kyle. They knew each other for weeks. And while it's nice that he got that happy ending with her, to me, it doesn't have the same emotional payoff and resonance as this comic does. So it slightly made, even though I still love the Selina Bruce moments in Dark Knight Rises, it irked me about Dark Knight Rises a little bit more, having that nod to the Nolan's bad signal, because it's like, damn it, this book did their ending so much more justice than Nolan did.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you about your assessment of Nolan's version of their ending, but what I will say is I will agree with you that I think I prefer this just so slightly more, and it's because we actually got to see them grow old together, whereas, yes, that's my headcanon for what happened in The Dark Knight Rises, and I'm assuming that's what happened, and that's what I want to happen, but we never actually got to see it. And what I'll say, although I do think that The Dark Knight Rises, I mean, that was just I couldn't have been happier for that with that ending than I was when I walked to the theater. And this book, and I think it's so awesome that Nolan gave that nod, that King gave that nod to Nolan, because Nolan gave us the same thing in live action that King gave us with this issue. And it's that, for me, The Dark Knight Rises, I had the same feeling walking out of that movie that I had reading this at the end of this comic. I had that same feeling of seeing my OTP get to live happily ever after. You know, and even in this, yes, it's a tragic ending in a way, but it's bittersweet because it is happy in the sense that they do get to grow old together. And I think it's beautiful. And that, I mean, yes, it's sad that he dies at the end, but of course they got to live a long, happy life together. And I think that's just so beautiful. So for me, this comic gave me the parallel I get with this is that it gave me the same feeling that The Dark Knight Rises did almost six years ago.
Sure. Yeah, I understand your perspective, but I'm just pointing out, for me, I like this better because there's history behind it. And also, I like the fact that his successors are actually people from the comics, as opposed to some random terrible cop that will be dead.
Oh, don't you start!
We'll be dead in 2 weeks. But let's keep talking about this issue. Go ahead, give your spiel without reading page by page.
Okay.
Because this is gonna end up being a 3-hour episode, and we're gonna lose listeners.
So. Good. I'm sorry. This episode deserves. If any episode deserves to be 3 hours, it's okay, this
but,
one.
But believe me, audiences don't want you to read the issue. So unless you want to petition DC to hire you to do audiobooks where you can read the issue to people, give us your thoughts without reading page by page.
Okay. Well, I see. I'm not gonna read page by page, but I want to make sure I touch on everything. I love when we see Bruce and Selina at the doctor's office, and we see them still having this debate. And I love that this debate is just never ending with them. And how Selina says, like, and I can't, for some reason, page 32. I'm reading on Comixology right now, and it won't load for me. So I actually technically can't read from this page right now because it's not loading on Comixology. Just this one page, and I don't know why.
See, even Comixology is telling you to speed things up.
But I love that she basically tells him, he's like, I trained with this guy who helped me with my memory and all, and he taught me how to have a great memory, and so it was on a boat. And she's like, that's very nice, Bat, but it was still on the street. And I love that, and I love just seeing them, you see them through this whole scene, they're there for each other, they're holding hands in that doctor's office, they know, they're both very nervous about what the verdict's going to be, that the doctor's going to come and tell them. But I love that they're like, you know what I'm saying? They're
yeah. I mean, they're still trying to because that's often what you do while you're waiting for potentially bad news. You try and distract yourself with you know the normalcies of life, right?
So yes, yeah, they're comforting each other in that moment, and I love that. And we see Bruce telling her this story, and this for some reason this scene right here is one that I always start crying during when I'm reading this comic. It is just when they're walking down the street and you see, and the fall leaves, it's really beautiful, the art here. You see the fall leaves and he continues this story about this guy with the 3-pack-a-day habit and this whole story. And it's cool because Bruce is talking about stealing stuff, which is exactly, I mean, Selina was a thief. So he's telling her how he learned how to be a thief when he was training with, I know it's in your headcanon, it's Ra's al Ghul, but whoever the hell this guy was. And then, so they're walking together, and then Selina she can't keep walking, and he realizes that she stopped a couple feet behind him, she's crying, and he just goes back and holds her, and he says, it's okay. Yeah, or no, she says, it's okay, I'm fine, but he just holds her there for a second, and then they continue walking, and she keeps telling the story, and I thought that was it's a quiet moment, it's a calm moment, but it's really just this, I mean, you see how much she loves him, how devastated she is about the news that, you know, that he's dying. And it's just, I mean, it's really, really emotionally impactful there that just, it always gets me, that scene where like I said, the fall, something about the atmosphere of this scene, it feels very somber, the sure, fall yeah, leaves yeah. And just, oh man, that scene always gets me.
And you got to give credit to the artist for that, for sure.
Yes, yes, I guess Michael Lark on these pages. So yeah, definitely, it's beautiful. So we get to the scene you were talking about, and I think it's awesome that we see Helena Wayne. And I'm really hoping, I would love it if in Tom King's Batman run that if we see a story where Selina actually has Helena. And
yeah, and that's what I'm hoping for is that eventually they'll age her because it's comics, and that's you know. But at the same time, I would hope that it leads to Bruce and Selena actually having Helena, for sure.
Yeah. I think that is something that, because it was teased here, I think there's a very good chance that we'll see that happen, that we'll see Selena get pregnant at some point during King's run. And I think that would be great.
And it's also worth noting that there was a recent comic, I can't remember which one it is, but they teased the return of Power Girl.
Really?
I can't remember which comic it was. It may have been, strangely enough, I think it may have been Suicide Squad. Don't quote me on that exactly, though.
Okay, but, yeah, I'm not reading that, so I don't know.
But if Power Girl is out there, maybe there is the alternate universe Helena from that World's Finest book that I was telling you about.
Sure, sure. I'd hope see Bruce and Selena that we've seen in Tom King's run on the main universe, on Earth One.
Oh, yeah, I definitely want them to have a Helena, for sure.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, it's also a possibility that that version of Helena, that alternate Earth version of Helena, that was in that other book, was also teased. Have you read that book, by the way?
No, I have not.
World's Finest? You really should. There's a great scene where she meets, there's a great issue, actually, a whole issue.
Uh-huh.
Where Helena meets Damien, and it's just the interplay between the two of them.
Really?
It's fantastic. Yeah.
That could be very interesting.
Yeah, it's a great book. I recommend if Comixology ever has a sale on those particular issues,
mm-hmm.
Definitely check them out. I think you'll dig it.
Cool. Well, thanks for the recommendation.
Backcat flavor in that book.
Nice. Yes. As is usual when Helena is involved, so I love that, and that's one of the reasons I love the Birds of Prey TV show, just like you do, so much. We talked about it with the bats, and by the way, that's my favorite version, besides what it represents in terms of it being associated with the Dark Knight trilogy and what that means in terms of the parallel between the way Nolan ended things and the way King's ending things in this issue. That's my favorite version of the bat symbol. So
yeah, it's a cool symbol.
I love it. Then we get this, oh man, this moment that is just, I mean, it's just this really nice moment between Bruce and Selena where you really see, and you talked about it a little bit, the way where you see how much Bruce cares about Selena and that he wants, he's telling her, he's like, okay, even though I'm going to die, I still want somebody like me, like another version of me I want him to be there for you and to take care of you and that he'll be there for you. So I want you to find Barry and find another version of me.
Although that doesn't really make sense because a younger version of Bruce Wayne in that universe is not going to want the older version of Selina Kyle. He's going to want to find his own, right? So it doesn't necessarily, unless she goes and finds another Bruce Wayne of similar vintage, it doesn't really make sense.
Well, maybe there is no Selina. Maybe Selina Kyle is somebody else on his Earth.
Right, but a 25-year-old Batman is not going to date a 65-year-old Selina Kyle.
Is
what I'm saying.
I don't know. Okay, so anyway, I freaking love this scene where just Bruce, you really see how much he cares about her and how he's worried that she's going to be alone when he dies. And I mean, it's really, again, Tom King writes Batman as vulnerable while still making him powerful. And that's what I love. That's one of the things I love about King's run is how he walks that line. And this is a moment where we really see the vulnerability of Bruce, seeing him. I mean, this is something that real people deal with, like, I mean, like, it's very real, him worrying about that he's dying and he's worrying about his wife being alone after that.
Right.
And
yeah, sure.
I mean, it's extremely touching and extremely, extremely powerful. And I love he gets in bed with Selena and they're laying there together and she had told him to turn off the light before he gets in bed. And then she's just like, "Bat, yes, Cat, you forgot the light." He says, "Yeah, I'll get it in a second. Just give me a second." She says, "Okay." And I mean, you could interpret this in a couple ways. I mean, you could just see he's tired, but I think that also he just wants to spend every last second with her, you know, because he knows he doesn't have much time left and sure. He's just there. And he's like, he just wants to lay there with her for a moment. And I think that's so, I mean, God, I love that so much. Yeah. So then we get to Bruce. He's working out, and we get this song again that I told you would come back with Alfred, this beautiful song. Some of these days you'll miss your honey, that's playing as Bruce is working out, and he's frustrated because he can't lift the weights anymore. He starts coughing. She comes down. And this, again, it's another callback. The way King, in this issue, it's so brilliant how King planted seeds earlier that then get paid off later in this issue, where earlier in the issue when Selena says, "Are you here to help me?" And he says, "No, I'm not here to help you." And then they kiss. Then we see this. It's sort of the reverse of this, where Bruce is really frustrated, and Selena's the one who always knows how to make Bruce feel better, is what it comes down to. And sure. He says to her, "What, are you here to help me?" And she just looks in his eyes and says, "No, I'm not here to help you." And then we get the second amazing Bat-Cat kiss in this issue, which, again, this is one of my favorites as well, right up there with the other one from this issue, right up there with the one from Hush. And a few others that I really love in comics. But this one, oh my goodness, it's beautiful. Just them. I mean, this is something we don't see that often because it's them as an elderly couple, but just still together, still you see how much they love each other. And just this one, another one page, splash page, and we see the music still playing, and it's the title. This is where we get the excerpt. It's the title of this issue, Some of These Days. God, and this is just, I mean, at this point when I'm reading the issue, I'm trying to keep it in control here, and I don't even have the tissue box next to me. But I mean, when I read this issue the first time,
if you start crying, I'm going to hang up on you. But go ahead.
Oh my goodness. I'll tell you, when I was reading this issue, what I was trying to say was when I was reading this issue for the first time, I was just bawling my eyes
sure,
out.
That's understandable. Yeah, for sure.
I just, and we get, I mean, and it that wasn't even the extent of it yet. I mean, because then we get this scene with Selena and Bruce, and she's sitting next to him on his deathbed. She's just comforting him. And you see, as you pointed out, we've got a lot of the Bat family there. And King went through and he pointed out exactly who each one of these people are supposed to be. And I can't remember. It's hard to tell who some of them are. I think, I don't know if you've got it open right now, but I think the way, I think it's, well, Jason?
One is certainly Barbara.
I think it's Jason on the far left. Then I don't know who's there. Then we've got Barbara and Dick. Then we've got Carrie Kelly, which is an interesting little thing he threw in there. Then I think we've got Duke Thomas, maybe. Then we've got Stephanie. I don't know who that is Stephanie.
Let me get to the page. Hold on.
Okay. I think we've got – I think Stephanie and Tim. So on the far right. I don't know. It's page 38.
Yeah, it's probably – I would assume – it's Stephanie and Tim.
Okay. Yeah. That's. Do you know who's in between? I think that. So you think that's. We got Harry. Then.
Okay. The black dude is definitely Duke Thomas.
I mean, okay. Yeah. That's no what I thought. About that. Then next to him though, who's that guy in the orange shirt?
Crap. That's a very, very good question.
Yeah, I don't know who that is, but I know Tom King. He talked. I think.
Okay, well, Dick is holding Barbara. That's obvious.
Yes. Yeah.
I didn't want to say. Well, I'm not going to say it because it's. Let's not go there. I'm guessing that's Tim with Stephanie Brown. That's for sure.
Yeah.
On the left, it's probably Jason.
Jason, yeah. And the next to him, is that Cassandra, maybe?
It could be, or could it be Helena? But Helena might be...
Oh, yeah.
She might be doing the whole, you know, protecting the city thing, so it might not be...
Yeah.
It could be Cassandra, or it could be Helena, but...
Okay.
You'd think Helena being his daughter would probably be closer to him, right?
Might be Helena. I'm not sure. I think King at one point pointed out who they all are, but I can't remember exactly. I remember obviously some of them. Some of them are obvious, but not all of them. Okay. And then we see in these two picture frames next to Bruce, I think we see Bruce and Gordon in one of them.
Yeah, and then Alfred.
And then Alfred, yeah. Which is nice. And God, this gets me every time. Good night, Bat. And then you see this art is so beautiful.
Oh, yeah.
Selena, and you see the tears in her eyes. I love you.
Yeah.
And now we're at the last page, and this is where I cry a lot when I read different, especially Tom King's run.
The skinny Kevin Smith, folks. That's
what, Oh my goodness. But I mean, this had me audibly sobbing. Like I was like, you know when you like start like heaving because you're like sobbing so hard?
Sure, yeah.
That's what I was doing when I read this for the first time. Because like, all right, so we see Selina and she gets into the Batmobile. Just, and I love the parallel again. So many parallels in this issue. We see the parallel to her. It's very similar to when she gets in there in the first, at the very beginning of the issue on that one big splash page where she's in the Batmobile with her hands on the wheel, and we see her there again here, and she hears a meow, and then she looks down at the seat, and there's a little kitten, and it's a cat says meow again, and she just looks at the cat. She says, "And where did you come from, darling? What's this?" And attached to the cat's collar is a note that says, "I love you too, cat, from the first kiss to the last." And I mean, again, this is really where I just completely lost it reading this issue for the
I see
first
that.
time.
That's cool because it's sort of a callback to the whole mice thing, just the reverse. Him being the mouse sends her a cat, right? So I think it's
Exactly, exactly. It's a beautiful payoff. Again, another parallel sort of that pays
and I
off.
really do dig the Batmobile, the design that King has, or
Yeah,
that sorry, the artists of both books have come up with because. Both issues or both stories, I should say.
yes,
But
it's a very cool Batmobile.
like
And
it's got that classic on it. Like it's classic meets a futuristic car, but without going overboard.
yes.
It.
And I just, man, this scene, like it's this scene's amazing. And it's like you see like that note just it's Batman saying that he'll always be there for her, that he's always loved her, and that it's him, it's God, I mean, I love it. It's just him leaving something behind for her and reaffirming his love for her, and again that you like you said, the payoff of her leaving the mice for him and then him leaving the little kitten for her, and you just see it as it
No,
zooms out.
he should have
It's
left about four of them in the car for her just to even it out. And now say, now you gotta clean it because Alfred's dead.
it's very cinematic in the way it's also constructed. It's this 9-panel page layout, but you see Selena with the cat, she's holding the cat, and then it zooms out, and you just hear the cat say meow,
And it's also
meow,
cool
and
because
then.
it kind of gave me vibes, reverse vibes of Batman, the ending of Batman Returns, where he's holding the cat.
Yes, I didn't think of that. That is a great point. It's that it might have been an intentional nod to that actually. And I think that's a beautiful scene too, although again, it irks me at the end of Batman Returns that they don't end up together, but that's something I've already griped about
Yeah,
in this.
I would have
But
rather a Tim Burton sequel than any of the Schumacher shit. But
oh,
it's
absolutely. Absolutely. And
that's neither here nor there.
then we see Selena, so like I said, it zooms out on her, it cat meow, meow, and then purr, and then end. You just see the end of the issue, and then God, this issue. All right, well, you give your closing thoughts, and then I'll give my
Well,
closing
no,
thoughts.
you do it because you're going to end up repeating yourself, and then I'll because you already gave your closing thoughts at the top, or what I would have
Okay.
personally saved as my closing thoughts. But go ahead, reiterate them,
All right,
and
all right. This issue is. I mean, yeah, you're right. I did already kind of say some of it,
yeah, I
but
told you blew your load right at the beginning of the
it's. It's a
end.
masterpiece. It's a masterpiece. It is. I mean, every so much of Tom King's run has been a dream come true for me. But it's like this issue in particular is like, I mean, it. This is. If I don't think there's such thing as perfection when it comes to this type of stuff, when it comes to fiction. But I think there's something that can be perfect for an individual person. And for me, this is the perfect comic book issue that's ever been written. It is my favorite piece of fiction that's ever been written. I think it's beautiful. I think it's a beautiful love letter to the Bat-Cat relationship. The beginning of 2017, I called Rooftops my favorite comic book issue of all time, and I didn't think anything would ever top it, and I certainly didn't think anything would ever top it in 2017. And then towards the end of the year, King comes out with this, and not only it even topped that slightly for me. I mean, I never would have expected in that same year he'd top himself. And he did. I mean, he wrote this issue, and I, like I said, this is one that I mean, I want to be buried with this book is how much I love this book. It is unbelievable. It's one of not even it is. I'll say. I mean, I haven't read every single piece of fiction ever written, but like I said, it's my favorite piece of fiction I've ever read. It's beautiful. It's an incredible story, and I love it so much.
All right. So did you want to do your grade as well, or
is that even a question for this?
No, but just out of formality, do it.
Sure. This is, if I could give it an A++, I'd give it an A++. So, but it's so an A+. I'll give it an A+.
Okay, cool. I am really enjoying Tom King's run, for sure. I am a proponent of the Batman Catwoman relationship. I think that if he is ever going to be given a send off where he retires from being Batman and ends up with somebody, I think it should be Selina Kyle. And I think this issue does a good job of showing us the bookends of that relationship with what I would assume. You know, I'm not so stringent when I look at an issue and say, okay, this is canon, this is not. To me, what I do is I just encapsulate everything I've ever read that features Batman and Catwoman as being the middle portion of the story. This way I can count it all, official continuity be damned. So that's how I roll. But I really love this issue. I think it was probably the best Batman single issue comic book I read in the year 2017. I think that, and I'll go ahead and say it now because there's still plenty of time in the year, so this might change, but my favorite Batman comic book of 2018 so far are the two issues that feature Superman. So again, written by Tom King. Mm-hmm. But in this particular case, I think it ended 2017 on a high note. And it mm-hmm. got me looking forward to not only the wedding, but the possibility of beyond in terms of with Helena. And I really hope they bring her back, because no offense to the Helena Bertinelli, the whole mob boss's daughter shtick is not doing it for me. The reason why, you know, I like a character like the Flash is because it's a legacy character. The reason why I like, Robin is a legacy character, and Batman to a degree is a legacy character, in the sense that he's passed it down to Dick and you know, Tim in certain cases, you know,
Terry,
but also even Damian in the far future. So that's a legacy character, and I think while Catwoman doesn't have a direct legacy character, what I think is good about Helena is that she's the legacy of both, and I just love that aspect of her character. So I really hope that that wasn't just a one-off tease. I really hope that there's something that is built upon through the rest of Tom King's run and beyond, because I think she's a fascinating character. And so overall, I'm going to agree with Jordan on this, and I'm going to give the issue, Batman Annual number 2, A+.
All right. Not often we have the same grade, but I'm glad to hear that you're in complete agreement with me there on this one.
Yeah, I mean, hey, when something's good, it's good. And there's
yeah.
But that wraps up our Batman Annual number 2 / Valentine's Day for Jordan / news roundup episode. We are a part of the Batman on Film, or not, our Batman Podcast Network, hosted by Batman on Film. And if you want to hear more about Batman that is not necessarily focused on the Batman-Catwoman relationship, I'm sure you can find that at the Batman Podcast Network. So go
search. You can find some stuff that is focused on the Batcat relationship, though. I know the BOF podcast just did a commentary on Gotham by Gaslight.
But I'm sure that after hearing your lengthy read through of the issue, that people probably need a break from it. So if they want
to, there's no such thing as a break. As a break from Batcat.
Same people don't think about Batman and Catwoman 24/7. But we've established on this show that you are not all there many times before. So that's neither here nor there. But if you want other Batman podcasts, go there. If you are somebody that is like Jordan, who eats, sleeps, and breathes Batman and Catwoman relationship all day long, every day, and you want to talk to Jordan about it, where can you do that?
You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanB. I would love to talk Batcat with anyone. Hit me up over there. I'd be thrilled to chat Batcat. And I also want to solicit some iTunes reviews. So if you like what you're hearing from us, or if you don't, we'd love to hear from you on with an iTunes review. It would help us out a lot. Thank you.
And if you want to talk to me about, if you're one of the people who likes Birds of Prey, the TV show, and want to talk to me about that, or if you want to send, you know, if you want to get Ashley Scott on this podcast to do an interview, you can send her my way at Superhero Sci-Fi and on Twitter, and I'd gladly start the conversation to get her on this podcast. But do that. I'd be great, or tell her to come on the show, and that'd be greatly appreciated, and tag me in those conversations. But if you want to talk to me about Batman or Superman or Green Lantern or any other DC character, or hell, if you're a Marvel fan and want to talk to me about how awesome Black Panther was, you can do that too at Superhero Sci-Fi, like I said. Until our next episode, we hope you have a wonderful weekend and a fantastic week. So long, everybody.
Batcat forever, from the first kiss to the last. Bye-bye.
Some of these days, you'll miss me, honey. Some of these days, you'll be so lonely. You'll miss my hugging. You'll miss my kissing. You'll miss me, honey, when I'm